Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen.
Hello and welcome back to Success Is, the podcast where we explore different paths to achievement. I'm Phil Portman, and today I'm joined by Andrew Chestnut, founder of The Authority Forge. Andrew helps entrepreneurs turn what they already know into powerful platforms that build authority and attract clients without feeling like they're constantly selling. With two decades of experience in the learning industry, he's mastered the art of taking complex ideas and transforming them into clear, engaging, and profitable content. Through story-driven webinars, podcasts, and presentations, Andrew teaches coaches and consultants how to confidently grow their business while building a brand that feels authentic and human. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Phil. Really appreciate you having me on the show today.
Yeah, so let's kick it off. What does success mean to you?
So what success means to me is clarity. I've seen it so many times. I'm on my third company building right now. I help build 2 7-figure companies. And one of the biggest issues you run into as an entrepreneur is you run with this mix of optimism and a really brilliant idea and a little bit of ADHD and a lot of gumption and a lot of grit. And you mix that all together and it sometimes turns into, let me go into every direction I possibly can. Or I'm just here to do whatever is going to make me money now. And it takes a long time to get out of that. It's sort of a response mechanism we have to being in business. And I've seen so many companies who know exactly what they're doing. Like they're very good at their niche, but they just try to go out and, you know, omnipresent marketing. Let me just kind of spew this really far and wide and see what happens. And so it's the companies that I see that have narrowed down and gotten really specific about what they do and gotten very clear about the one or two things they want their audience to take away. Those are the ones I've seen do the best. So to me, success is clarity.
Absolutely. Yeah. Something I always say is I want to be an inch wide, mile deep, not a mile wide, inch deep, right? I want to be laser focused on things. And that can be tough. You talked about, it seems like a lot of really great entrepreneurs have like that ADHD, right? Where they're going a mile a minute. So it's like the thing that makes you successful in certain areas, it's kind of your weakness in another area.
Yeah.
But when we talked before, you had brought up a phrase that I hear time and time again from successful people, and that is, I'll figure it out, right? Like that phrase right there, I'll figure it out, is something that I hear from people who reach all kinds of success. Can you elaborate a little bit on that, and have you found that in kind of your journey as well?
Oh, 100%, I found it in my journey. I think that's one of the greatest gifts I've gotten from entrepreneurship is the ability to just figure it out. There is a freedom around that concept. So that no matter what happens, you know, maybe not a giant meteor hitting the earth, but, you know, no matter what happens with us, we are going to figure out how to fix it, how to make it go right, how to change something. And, you know, you don't get that very often in regular jobs. Like you don't get the ability to make those decisions for yourself. You don't get the ability, the freedom to be able to do that. And so I think there's a huge amount of grit behind it as well. As entrepreneurs, we tend to be incredibly resilient. Like we are the ones who will continually be kicked in the gut over and over again, stand back up and say, I'm not done yet. And I think it's that level of resilience that you get from it too. So I think those are the two main things that entrepreneurs have that we give the world.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think part of it too is like that constant need for learning. And we were talking briefly about like Meta and Google and some ads and things like that. And what you knew in marketing 5 years ago, 10 years ago is like totally different than what you need, you know now. So that constant learner mentality, I think, is part of it as well.
Absolutely. And we're great learners. That's another thing. I talk about ADHD a lot because my mom is a neuropsychologist who specialized in ADHD. So, and 90% of entrepreneurs are neurodivergent. This is who we are. It gives us a very specific ninja skill. We can think in a million directions at once, and we will dive down a rabbit hole and hyper-focus on one thing and just go all the way down that rabbit hole. And it's that learning. Like we're always trying to learn something. We're always trying to pick something up. And when done in one direction, and I want to go back to what I said, where success is clarity. Clarity is also going in one direction, not in all of them. Like if you're going, you know, don't, like you said, inch wide, mile deep. You know, so, there's another side to that too, but getting that clarity also requires education.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you help entrepreneurs turn what they know into platforms. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest mindset shift people need to make before they can truly see themselves as an authority?
You can't read the label if you're inside the bottle. And I think that's one of the greatest things I heard, because it really sums up exactly what entrepreneurs do. We're so far inside of our business. And most of the time when we're first starting and just getting a little bit of traction, you know, we're chief everything officer of our company. We're doing billing, we're doing payroll, we're doing, you know, our marketing, we're doing our job, we're doing everything at once. And it's difficult for us to step back and see, and I'm saying us, because I've done this. I created my products out of a problem I had. So I'm not just selling this. I'm also a client, right?
Yeah, that's how it works, right? You're like, this. Yeah. I need to figure this out. It doesn't exist. Oh, yeah. Shoot. I just made a business.
Yeah. And the entrepreneurs were terrible at that. You know, I had one good friend of mine. She's been in business for years. And I'm like, I still don't know what the hell you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she was very good. I mean, she had clients, she was making a decent amount of money at it, but it's like, I don't know what the hell you do. And yeah. I think it was part, you know, that was what this was born out of. So to kind of answer your question, but but to go back to it, we can't read the label from inside the bottle. And with her, it was in the thing where she was already doing some marketing. She was doing a decent job at it. It wasn't like it was, you know, she was failing miserably at all, not at all. But she couldn't see the issues she was having. She couldn't see it as from an outside objective observer standpoint of somebody coming in and saying, you're really good at this. Let me break this down into something that people can digest and that people will get right away. If it takes you longer than 30 seconds to explain what you do, you're spending too much time.
Yeah. No, I agree.
It's hard. It's hard.
One of the things that I found that helped me scale in entrepreneurship was when I started scheduling time to reflect.
Yes.
Right? Like I got so caught up in the day-to-day operations and I could just go down rabbit holes and be busy from the time I wake up till I go to bed. And then I was like, the only time that I'm coming up with good idea or reflecting on things is when I'm trying to go to bed, like sitting on a pillow or 3 a.m. in the
morning. Because that's what my brain does at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah. And so I was like, what happens if I actually schedule time to like reflect on things and stuff? And that pulling away a little bit certainly, you know, helped me kind of figure that out a little bit. So, you know, I think there is an importance to pulling back out of it, but what are some of the steps that you walk through with an entrepreneur to help them identify that problem first, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure some people don't initially see it as a problem. They're like, hey, my work ethic, my involvement in the company, it's gotten me to this point, mm-hmm. right? How do you identify the problems? And then like, what are the first steps they kind of take in that journey?
Yeah. To go back to the having that time for yourself thing, one of the things I did, and these are my two non-negotiables about lunch, I do non-sleep deep rest. It's not quite meditation, but it's not a nap. It's kind of in between space around there, but it helps me to be able to put my brain kind of in neutral for a second, just let it do its thing. And I get some of my greatest moments then, and I get at least one day off a week. And that helps me to refresh myself just so that way I can actually show up for my you know, company. Right. To go back to the question about how do I understand where I'm at? I think the one thing that you would look at is your business scalable? Like if you, God forbid, something happened, you were hit by a bus, would your company keep going? Like, could they grow? Do they have enough? You know, are you the only person involved in this? Is I think the first thing I would think about. If the answer to that is no, that your company wouldn't be able to keep going, there's a problem somewhere. And the second thing is again, if you can't explain what you do in under 30 seconds, like let's say that you were in an elevator with Grant Cardone and you had like two sentences to tell him what you were doing. Could you do that? And if you can't easily, then that's an issue. You need to take a look at what, you know, you need to take a look at that messaging. Yeah. Put a couple of questions, answered a few questions there, but.
You call that the elevator speech or the stump speech or something like that about, you know, defining what they are.
Yeah.
So can you kind of give us some advice on how you would walk through someone through building that story, building that elevator speech or that pitch, or really defining what makes them special? Because what I found is sometimes I'm talking to a business owner, an entrepreneur, a consultant, and they found success, but sometimes in a niche, but they have no idea why, right?
Yeah.
And so they're like, you know, all over the place spending money on marketing that doesn't make sense, and trying to pursue different markets and areas of business that don't make sense because they really don't understand themselves or their brand. Mm-hmm. How do you help that type of person figure that out?
The first thing, everyone tries to like say, here's what I do. Like, here are the five new features I have. Here are the five things and that's not the way to do it. What you want to do is connect with people. And there's two different ways. Their major way to do that is through stories. Like, here is my journey. Russell Brunson talks about this where he says, be the guide. And that's part of what he teaches. And it's exactly what you should do. Like with me, my business came out of a problem I had. I saw other entrepreneurs having this problem. I have a specific skill set that's really good at solving this problem. Therefore, I'm going to tell people, this is the path I took. This is what I've done. And here's how you can do it too. So, and have that as a story-based side of things. So for me, 20 years in the learning industry, had to give a really bad FDA compliance training. It was absolutely awful. I said, I will never commit academic assault again. Realized I'm really good at helping people boil down simple, complex information into simple information. First webinar I ever did was for a very complicated life insurance policy. it can be done with anything. And then learned, and then went on and said, hey, other people have this problem. I want to do it too. So as far as that, you know, hopefully that answered it. But that's the main part of it is the story is the number one thing. The second thing to do is again, short and sweet. You don't have to give away. My grandfather had a saying. His saying was, I just asked for a glass of water. You don't have to turn the hose on me. I think as entrepreneurs, we're so incredibly passionate about what we do. And we want to tell the entire world we're brilliant about what we do. It's really hard for us to boil that down. And it's really hard for us to get that information from point A to point B quickly. And the only way that people can absorb that information is bite-sized chunks. Give them little chunks of what they're doing. Make it relate to them. Here's your problem. Here's my solution. Here's what it can do for you. So nice little bite-sized chunks. And that's the other way to boil it down. So those are the two things. You know, those are the two. Use stories. Tell a story. Be the guide. And the second part of that is break it down into chunks. You're an expert. Others are not.
Yeah,
so, that's also why that's why it's good to bring in somebody else from the outside is I can, you know, I can say things like, well, they're not going to understand this. And here's why. Here's another way to put it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's sometimes just them getting things out and vocalizing it and walking things through it. It starts connecting the dots in their head. And they're almost probably a lot of times coming up with it while you're just listening. Right. You're kind of like the therapist basically at that point, right? Like
basically. Yeah. We're a little bit everything. Pull up the couch. We'll do our thing. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it does turn into that. It's a really collaborative thing. I can't ever speak in somebody's voice, but what I can do is help them to view the gaps they have. So I was working with somebody, Chris, long time ago. And he's a good friend and mentor. And he was really frustrated one day. He's like, why aren't people getting this? And kind of went on a bit of a tirade. And I told him, look, you've been doing what you do for 15 years. You are really, really good at it. You can jump from point A to point F in a single bound. Like, because you know, you can bridge that gap quickly. Everyone needs B, C, D, and E to be able to fill it together. Those people with kids, when you teach your kids how to tie their shoes, you learn this very carefully. You learn this right away because then you have to think about all of those gaps in between. Okay, what do I do now? I go over this way. Now I make the loop. And it's really hard to teach your kids how to tie their shoes, like way harder than we think it is. Having somebody to be able to, and that makes you step back and say, oh, there's some more parts here, you know, and having somebody to guide you through the process of how to communicate that to somebody else is difficult. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. So a topic that I like to talk about lately and asks anybody involved with things like content building, authority building online is AI tools and automation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with it changing how people are creating content, how do you see the future of authority building evolving with a lot of this AI automation tools?
Phil, that's an absolutely amazing question. And I think it's something that's really relevant right now because AI and large language models have this really wonderful wow factor. Like they sound like they can make the greatest thing in the face of the planet. They can do everything. They'll make my lunch and, you know, everything, right? They're really good statistical models. And bit of background, I used to be a programmer. I've worked with large language models and neural nets. So I have some kind of inside information on how they work. Really good statistical models. And so what they will do is they will change the way that we're doing things and take the low-hanging fruit out of the equation. So if you're writing mediocre transactional emails for webinars, you're not going to have a job. Like that can be taken over very easily by ChatGPT. If you're what you're looking for more is out of strategy. Like it's good at writing, but it still needs a hand from a human to step in. It'll get you about 60% of the way there. You still need an expert to walk into it. I use ChatGPT in my business. It's been an awesome tool. You know, I'll be very transparent about that. It's been a really awesome tool. It still needs a human to step in for that high level. It's not good at the high level strategy. It's not good at writing stories, and it's not good at keeping consistency. And so we use it at the beginning, and then I have a human always go through and write stuff. Either it's me or one of my team, just to make sure. But it's really changed the world, and I think it's going to continue to keep going forward. But going back to my comment about a statistical model, think about what it's trained on. One of my copywriters told me this, and I think it's the perfect way to explain what's happening. He said, what do you think there's more of? Really awful writing or really good writing? There's a lot more really awful writing. Yeah. So if you think about it, you know, kind of this averaging out, it's going to average towards crap, right? Yeah. Or yeah, mediocre, right? And so that's where that, you know, we're not going to be able to train it on enough high level writing to be able to make it really make sense. So you're going to get mediocre writing, decent writing. It's all right. And then kind of take it from there. It's really good at taking a bunch of thoughts and boiling it down, like getting structures and stuff, but it's not really good. It's kind of some of the storytelling, some of the make sure it's consistent, make sure things flow properly.
Sure.
So, yeah. I think it's going to be a powerful tool, and it really has changed our world. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not going to have your individual voice a lot of times, yeah. Right? It's not going to have what differentiates you from every other person in your field doing something similar to what you do.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. I've never heard somebody kind of describe it in that fashion, that there's a lot of junk out there that at this training, this model, and oftentimes it's not smart enough to be able to determine what is junk and what's not. So you're using potentially, it doesn't mean that it's really great at it just because it thinks it is. So yeah. That's fascinating. So
there was this thing with Google search when it first came out, and or they started using Gemini to do Google searches, and it's, you know, coming up with things like, if it was at, you know, somebody asked it, you know, what do I do to keep my toppings on top of my pizza? And it would say, glue them, you know, use glue in your and I wasn't 100% sure if it was just, you know, hallucinating, or it was getting that crap, or if it was Skynet calling the herd, take all the stupid ones and just kind of get the smart ones. You know, I don't know.
That's right.
I still say please and thank you to Siri just to be safe. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Double check everything that it says on that. So 100%. So, you know, being in the learning industry for as long as you have, how do you translate educational design principles into business and marketing success? Because those don't necessarily always go hand in hand. You know, like thinking about even writing content and educating doesn't always mean that it's going to translate into business and marketing success. So how do you help bridge that gap?
Well, if you think about what the basics of learning design is, taking a complex problem and breaking it down so people can digest it. And that's exactly what marketing is as well. Taking this really cool thing you have and breaking it down so people can understand it. So I think they're actually tied very closely with each other, because you have to teach people what you do before they'll buy. A confused buyer never buys anything. And so they're taking that and parlaying it into marketing was actually incredibly easy, because it was just, you know, I already had to explain some of this stuff anyway. Now I just do it and I tweak the way I do it, but it's still the same skill set. Because I mean, that's a lot of what marketing is, teaching. Like, here's what I do. Here's why you should use it. So it really boils down to it's a similar path, which is why I kind of picked it up and went in this direction. I love marketing. I love this stuff, but it's also, it went right along with something I had been doing for years anyway.
Yeah. I love the value first approach. I think that's fantastic. It's like, there's the value and stuff, but the part that I see that people sometimes miss is the call to action or asking for the sale, what I'm saying? And that's the component. And I wonder how you help people kind of transition that, or is that something they naturally figure out along the way? Or have you seen struggles with people like putting out all this educated content, but then like missing that, how do I convert this to actually a sale?
Yeah, you're 100% right. Like a lot of people have difficulty with that because they think it's sleazy. And really what it breaks down to in the back, a lot of what we do in my job is not just being able to hear what people are saying, but hear what they mean. Like what's actually going on in the background, like what's actually going on in their heads. And a lot of people who have trouble with call to actions really just, they don't want to feel sleazy, or they're questioning their value. Why should I charge people? I don't know any more than anyone else does. So it's this mindset shift that has to happen with call to actions. I mean, I hate call to actions that are really aggressive. But yeah, you got to ask people, hey, if you want to work together, let's book a call. Here's how to do it. Least number of clicks you need to make that happen. Like, and just call it out. It doesn't have to be anything super sleazy. But really, it's not just not using a call to action. It's also, why don't you think you need to use this call to action? Is there something else going on in the back of your head?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And there's a lot of that imposter syndrome, I think that people just generally have, especially if they're new in the business. Or pursuing a new market or a new industry or something like that. There's a lot of that, like, who am I to be an authority on this subject, right? How do you approach somebody like that who's like, yeah, I get what you're saying, but I'm not an authority? Because I think about like the Dunning-Kruger effect, where it's like, the more you start learning about a subject, the more you realize you don't know about that subject. And it's kind of like counterintuitive. It's like, I start off and I don't know much about it. It's like, oh yeah, yeah, I got all the confidence in the world. And then I start kind of studying it. And I'm like, oh my God, there's so much I don't know. Right. And that's always a struggle for people in business or any area when you start learning about it. My wife has been horse riding for a long time, and the more she gets into it, the more she's like, there's so much to learn about it, So how do you help someone with that? Who like, they start getting into it and they're like, I don't know if I'm an authority on this,
Yeah. I think that's part of the path that is entrepreneurship. So I helped a client write a TED talk recently, and she was the first woman to climb the second tallest mountain on every continent. And one of the things that the topics that we had inside of this TED talk and inside of what she speaks about is that it's not the goal, it's the journey. And I think what you're talking about here is part of the journey. As entrepreneurs, we have this sort of journey we go through that helps us to build that confidence, to build that grit, to build that ability to be able to say, I'm going to figure it out. And I think it's part of the process. As far as helping people through it, what ends up happening is you have to go back and just show receipts and say, okay, well, you've done what? Okay, well, you've done this and this and this. Why don't you think you're an authority here? You don't have to be perfect. There's other people that are going to do what you do. That's fine. That doesn't lessen your value at all. What value are you bringing to people? And do you think that that's worth what you're charging? And most people say yes, because honestly, most people are undercharging. I think people significantly undervalue themselves. But yeah, it's walking them through that process and just letting them know, first of all, let's look at the receipts. Let's prove to you that you've done this. And the second part is there are other people out there. There will always be other people out there who know what you do and do something similar. That doesn't mean you're bad at it.
Yeah. So you touched on a great subject, which is pricing, right? Like, and I'm sure you probably experienced this with your clients, but it's like, what do I charge? Is it too low or is it too much? Yep. How do you help people figure that out and navigate what to charge?
So charging is always a value proposition. How much value or how much, and it doesn't have to be a tangible ROI. It's how long would it take them to do the same thing without your help? So I can either spend $0 and use Google University and figure it out, or I can use the cheat code, use you, spend $6,000 doing it, but now I'm 2 years ahead of where I was and have somebody guide me through the process. And so that's really what we do. The other side is a lot of coaches like to like to do one-on-one coaching and be, you know, really high touch, and that's not scalable. And so how do we do something that's maybe high end for you? So to talk to you personally, one-on-one is 10 grand a month, period, done. You know, that's how much it is. But we also do a group coaching at 3,000, and that's a little bit less. Now it's a little bit more. So sometimes it's just having those conversations of how do you structure, how do you balance the value, like the value that you're getting and the value you're giving between the two. And yeah, that's it. And it's a bit, and that pricing varies. If it's something that's really niche, you're going to have a very high pricing for it because it's something that not a lot of people are doing. And if it's, you know, something a little bit more common, it'll be less, but it just depends on each person. But yeah, again, it's something in the, it's the mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Love to hear any kind of success stories you have on that. You don't have to be specific on the name or the person, but would you mind kind of sharing with us a little bit about some success stories?
I had one friend of mine that was a pretty high level business coach and had been in business forever and was like charging $500 for an hour of her time. And I finally just sat her down and said, look, there's more here. Like what value do you think that person is getting out of what you have to say? You've got 20 years of experience doing this. Do you really think that's an equal value proposition? She thought about it for a bit and said, no, it's not. I mean, there's other coaching programs that are charging literally 20 times what I do. Wow. And getting less results, and just sitting her down and saying, here's your receipts, here's what you do, you know, and yeah, we ended up significantly increasing her one-on-one and implementing some group coaching as well to get that to work. But yeah, we just had to finally sit her down and just go, look, what are other people doing? Are they giving you the same value? I'm a big fan of SWOT analysis. You can do one pretty easily with ChatGPT at this point and deep research. And you know, what is the market going to bear and how much are you bringing to the table? Like how much value you're giving your clients? And usually it's a lot more than we think. I've done it too. I'll say we, cause I've done it too. I'm not alone on this one. I think everyone has that moment when they're pricing is a weird question. Cause a lot of people don't know how to, they don't know where they should put their pricing and they usually end up aiming low.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have a friend of mine that has a theory. He's like, just keep increasing the price until somebody says no.
Yeah.
Because the market's going to bear what the market's going to bear.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's like that 80-20 rule, right? Where there's 20% that are willing to pay that. Yeah. And then there's 20% on top of that that will pay like the high end of it. Mm-hmm. And the closer you can get in those 20s, the less time that you're spending making more money. And that's, you know, really, if you can get into a niche market that can support that, then, I mean, you're printing money at that point. You know?
And every client I've worked with who did the same thing where, you know, 20 years of experience and $500 an hour for business coaching always ends up with the clients that don't want to pay money. And they just end up being the client from hell. The practitioner doesn't have a good time at it. The clients aren't getting what they want and it turns into a mess. And because you end up getting the tire kickers, the people with Walmart syndrome. And so you really want somebody who's got enough skin in the game that makes it worth it for everyone, because now you know that they've put, let's say, $5,000 for a month's worth of coaching into the ring. They're going to do what you say. They value what you say. And they know the value that you're bringing to the table, and they're going to do what you, they're going to listen to you. Versus, you know, cheapening yourself for it.
Absolutely.
You know, we're worried about that income at first, but it's really got to, you got to think about it from the other way around. Like if you charge a higher price, you will still get clients. You know, it's not gonna cut off your clients. You aren't Walmart. Most of the people I work with are coaches. You're not Walmart. Yep. You're not going for a price leader here. You know, charging what you're worth, you'll get better quality clients. It will be a better interaction between you and the client, and everyone will get what they need out of the situation.
Yeah. And a lot of entrepreneurs that I talk to find success when they know what they don't want or what they won't accept or what they'll say no to or turn down, and getting rid of these customers that they know they don't want. Mm-hmm. And that transition piece seems like when an entrepreneur or independent contractor or salesperson, when they make that switch from I'm going to take any money I can to I'm going to pick and choose, then it seems like they kind of really start taking off at that point.
Absolutely. I would rather have one $10,000 client versus 10 $1,000 clients any day of the week. And it's not about the money. It's about the experience and the value proposition. Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we're kind of getting to the end here, but I just want to ask you, I'm always curious about hacks that like entrepreneurs have. And when you described one earlier about, you know, taking time to take the, like these little naps and things. And I'm looking for, you know, really common themes between entrepreneurs, and some of them it's, you know, it could be an exercise, daily walks, reading books, staying educated. Do you have any advice for our listeners on little hacks or little things that you do that have driven to your success or increased your productivity in any way?
Yep. The two, non-sleep, deep rest. That's one. There's three. Non-sleep, deep rest. I cut out all processed foods, and it makes it so much easier for my brain to work. It's done worlds of good for me. And the third one is the gym is my non-negotiable. Like 4 days a week, every morning, put my headphones in, just do my thing. That's sort of a meditation for me as well. Allows me to clear my mind, get myself going in the morning. And the exercise legitimately has a physiological effect on me. I notice the days when I don't have when it's not a gym day, and I notice the days when it is a gym day. And if I slack off, my body makes very sure that I know about it. So those are it sounds really cliche and a lot of people say it, but honestly, I've tried a bunch of different modalities, and those are the three things that have really significantly impacted my life.
Yeah. And honestly, I hear it time and time again from successful people and entrepreneurs. And I couldn't agree with you more on that. Most successful people that I talk to have some sort of physical activity that they do every day, some sort of exercise, some sort of routine, and they swear by it because it helps you relieve the stress, helps you stay motivated and all that.
Yeah. The stress is a huge part of it too. Like if I'm having a bad day, you can tell it in my lifts, right?
Yeah.
I put way more on. I just take all of my anger out on really cold steel. It's great.
Absolutely. So how can people connect with you or learn more about what you have going on?
Sure. My website, theauthorityforge.com. I'm also on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook as well as Instagram. I want to do something for your listeners because I do like giving back on something. If you go to theauthorityforge.com/playbook, I have a fill in the blank authority playbook that will get you up and going with your authority platform, shows you how to do it, goes through with actionable steps for it. So for your listeners, we'll do that for free for you guys. So you'll have it literally fill in the blank. Here's how to do it. Here's how to get that clarity. Go through the entire thing for you.
Great. Love it. Awesome. Thank you so much for that.
Anytime.
Andrew Chestnut, thank you for joining me on the Success Is podcast. And thank you for our listeners for tuning in. I'm Phil Portman, reminding you to stay focused, stay confident, and keep defining success on your own terms. Until next time.